Can you hear me? Okay, great. This morning, we'll be concluding our series in Genesis. You can begin to turn to Genesis chapter 50. And as we prepare to go there, I just want to ask, have you ever felt like you have been unjustly treated? I'm sure that's a novel idea. That feeling can result from the actions of a particular individual or, well, just the way the cookie crumbles in life. This week, there were prayer request emails flying around for several members with really big stuff going on, while undoubtedly, many other members had big things going on that were, well, maybe just perhaps more of a long-term nature or things that folks just wouldn't be aware of. Many of life's difficulties, well, let's be honest, they're things that other people may never know about. Times of challenge can always tempt us to think, this isn't fair. Like was shared at the ministry mic this morning, these times can leave us even doubting the promises of God. This week I was reminded of a time a while back when I felt I had been dealt with unjustly to the tune of $15,000 to $20,000. And when I say I was reminded of it, I had a conversation with someone involved in the situation this week. And then I couldn't get that conversation or that situation out of my head for the next several hours. Despite the fact that I had plenty of things to do and plenty of reasons to get it out of my head, such as preparing a sermon. But in that wrestling of not wanting to think or dwell on the past or that situation, I was repeatedly asking God to help me move on and focus on what I needed to be doing. The pressures of life that I felt from other things. I didn't want to be going to that place. But all that kept running through my head were my arguments and how I had been wronged and how they obviously had looked at this situation from the wrong vantage point. It was literally several hours of this before I found myself being directed by God, not to the task that He had me to do, but to the content of this morning's message. And that is where I found real help. Honestly, if I would have listened to my wife a couple of hours earlier, I probably could have been spared the last hours of my anguish. See, while we were eating lunch that day, Colleen had asked me what my message was on. And I shared with her it was chapter 50, and we were wrapping up the series, and that's all I could tell her because that's about as far as I had gotten to that point. And she asked me, what is chapter 50 about? And so I shared, well, really the main point is Joseph's statement to his brothers, what you meant for evil, God intended for good. In the gentle way that wives can, she reminded me that, at least in my situation, the other person wasn't intending evil, which I recognize was true. There were some differences of opinion and values, but it's not necessarily a moral issue, though, quite honestly, it feels like one when it's running through my head. It seems like there are few things that can rouse righteous indignation, like the feeling that we've been treated unjustly by someone or by our circumstances, and there's little recourse, whether it's a situation with parents or teachers, a boss, a big company, the government, a business partner, whatever the situation might be. So it wasn't until another 2 hours after my conversation with Colleen that the reality of this passage's relevance to my situation actually began to sink in. Never claimed to be quick. But if Joseph could get over true injustices done to him, and to be able to end up in the place where he acknowledges God's activity, overarching and undergirding even the evil things done to him, well, then maybe I might be able to gain some perspective for my much more minor scenario. Because just to be clear, I've never experienced anything remotely close to being, well, sold by my family, shipped off to a foreign country, placed into slavery, wrongly accused of rape, unjustly thrown in jail, left there for years. Nothing in my life has come even close to touching any of those things, even one of those things. None of my worst days begin to compare with the troubles that this guy has seen, yet he is the one putting a banner over all the evil things others intended to do to him, all as things God meant for good. Perhaps there's a lesson in there for me when things just don't go my way. What did Joseph see that I was missing? Now, I'm going to do something I don't always do in my messages. Sometimes I like to hold on to the big idea, the main point, until the end, because I'm afraid if I give it to you now, you might not listen the rest of the time. Actually, it's because I like to build my cause and make this seal-tight case for some big, inescapable conclusion. But this morning, I'm going to give you today's big idea right now. Because I like you. I don't know you all that well yet, which is probably why, but we won't go there. Here it is. God's good plans trump everything. For Joseph, God's good plans trumped his evil brother's actions. For me, God's good plans won't be thwarted whether I feel slighted or even actually am cheated out of something. God's good plans triumph over sin, obstacles, happenstance, hardships, and catastrophes. Here's what we're going to see today. God has a plan. His plan is good. And God is big enough to carry out his plans completely. Because Joseph was convinced God's good plan trumped everything, he interpreted everything in light of it. Past actions of others, past evil actions of others, well, he saw that as part of God's advancing plan. What about his present opportunity to exact retribution on his brothers? He saw that it was not his to take because God was unfolding his good plan. What about the fact that everything wasn't revealed in his lifetime? He didn't see the fulfillment of the big picture of all that God had promised. He was still able to look forward with anticipation. Because he knew that when God puts his plans into action, they're unstoppable. So let's read chapter 50. I'll make a few comments as we go, and then we'll spend the remainder of our time observing Joseph's faith in a big, purposeful, and good God whose plans can't be thwarted. Chapter 50, beginning in verse 1. Context where we ended last week is Jacob, Joseph's father, has just died. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, so the physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required for it, for that is how many are required for embalming. And the Egyptians wept for him 70 days. And just to pause, that is obviously just showing some of the respect for Joseph that this foreign nation, this place where he was a sojourner and an alien, had for him because of how he had served them. This mourning, this extensive mourning that was carried out for his father, was just 2 days short of what would have been customary for Pharaoh himself. Verse 4. And when the days of weeping for him were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, 'My father made me swear, saying, I am about to die in my tomb that I hewed out for myself in the land of Canaan. There shall you bury me. Now therefore, let me please go up and bury my father. Then I will return.' And Pharaoh answered, 'Go up and bury your father as he made you swear.'" Now, again, I want to pause. Was this just a case of Jacob already having purchased a cemetery plot and he didn't want it to go to waste? No, he remembered the promise God made to him. The promises that were made to Abraham and Isaac, and that God renewed with him as he was fleeing Esau. We have this account in chapter 28 of Genesis. "And he, Jacob, dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and at the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it, and behold, the Lord stood above it and said, 'I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east, and to the north and to the south, and in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land.'" Jacob wanted to be buried there because that was the land of promise. I'm sure he also wanted to help remind his children that no matter how good they had it in Egypt, Egypt was not their true home. God still had more of his plan to unfold for his family in Canaan. So Joseph went up, verse 7. "So Joseph went up to bury his father. With him went all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his household, and all the elders of the land of Egypt." Again, the respect that is given to him, the honor. "As well as all the household of Joseph, his brothers and his father's household. Only their children, their flocks, and their herds were left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen." Now this seems an odd addition. It's probably, again, a recognition of his status in the nation, that these soldiers would be sent to go because they want to assure his safety as he is leaving the borders of Egypt. Continuing, the end of verse 9, "It was a very great company." Verse 10. "When they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, they lamented there, and with great, very great and grievous lamentation. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. When the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning on the threshing floor of Atad, they said, 'This is a grievous mourning by the Egyptians. Again, not just Israel's children, but even the Egyptians. Therefore, the place was named Abel Mizraim. It is beyond the Jordan. Thus his sons did for him as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field at Machpelah to the east of Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place. After he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt with his brothers and all who had gone up to bury his father. Now the focus shifts. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him." I mean, just think about where these guys are at. They've had really several months now to consider this question. Dad falls in poor health and then dies. Then there's this lengthy embalming and mourning period and this traveling to bury him. All the time, the wheels are turning. What does this mean for us? What's going to happen now that Dad is no longer around to keep Joseph in check? He's not going to do anything while Dad's around. He wouldn't want to disappoint Dad. He's not going to dishonor the mourning period. But now we're getting back. What's in store for us? Verse 16. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, "Your father," notice, "your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you." And now they add in their own request, "Please forgive the transgression of your servants of the God of your father." See Joseph's response. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, "Behold, we are your servants." But Joseph said to them, "Do not fear. For am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me." Let's be clear, that's not escaping anyone's view. You meant evil against me. But God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So, do not fear. I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph remained in Egypt, he and his father's house. Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm about to die, but God will visit you and will bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." And then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. God has a plan. When I say that God's good plans trump everything, what are some of the plans that have already been revealed to his children in Genesis? As Joseph and his brothers would have traveled to the land that was promised to them, as they went to bury their father, they had the opportunity to reflect on the different encounters that their father Jacob and grandfather Isaac and great-grandpa Abraham had with God in this land. They would have traveled past the different stone monuments that those men would have erected to remind them of the faithful dealings with God and the promises made to them and to their children. Promises like this one from Genesis 12 made to Abram. I will make you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That's quite a statement. How about this one? Genesis 13. Lift up your eyes and look. From the place where you are, northward and southward, eastward and westward, for all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that no one can count. So that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. The first is this promise of a people that he is going to bring from Abraham. This one specifically speaks to the land that he's given to them, but also reinforcing the multitude of his descendants and their inheritance. One more, chapter 15. Know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there. And they will be afflicted for 400 years. But I will bring judgment on the nation that they serve, and afterward they shall come out with great possessions. Now, this one's getting even a bit more detailed. Everything's not quite as rosy in this one, but it's clearly planned out by who? It's planned out by God for good purposes. Hardship along the way, but a good design clearly is what God intends to do. They would have heard these stories, these accounts growing up. They would have visited these sites over the years. These weren't just areas of wishful thinking by their ancestors. These were promises made by God. These were areas where God revealed his plan to their fathers and guaranteed that he would bring them about. Clearly, Joseph got that more than his brothers did. If they grasped that fact, that they should have pleaded their case, they're asking for forgiveness maybe a little bit differently. Instead of just saying, hey, Dad said don't kill us, they could have pleaded according to the promises of God. This is what God intends to do through us as his offspring. Hey, we recognize we haven't always been real good at that blessing part, the part where we're to be a blessing to each other and to the nations. But God's got a big plan in the works. And he intends all of us to be a part of that. Instead, it was the best they could do to say, Dad said. They were wise to ask forgiveness and plead for mercy, but they failed to see themselves as an integral part of the fulfillment of God's promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But that fact didn't escape Joseph. That's why he could reply to their pleas with, do not fear. For am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil. You did. But God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So don't fear. I'll provide for you and your little ones. He could speak with comfort and compassion because he had a big picture of the plan of God that would not fail. Joseph had come to see their little family story as part of the bigger story. The dreams that he had had so many years before and that had gotten him into so much trouble were promises that God fulfilled. But not just for the end point of Joseph's elevation. He fulfilled them on his way to fulfilling the bigger promises that were made beginning with Abraham. He came to understand that even his brother's murderous intent and cruel treatments were actually part of God's plan. Joseph shows how big his God is when he declares, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." Now, I want to say to you that it would be a big God if he had said, "You meant evil against me, but God redeemed it for good." That would be more than I could figure out how to do. Or if you meant evil against me, but God used it for good. Or God allowed it for good. All of those things would show a God who is strong and powerful, but Joseph goes one step further. He said, "You had this intent, but God intended something else." And guess what? God's intents are the ones that rule the day. Could God have used, could he have devised a different way for Joseph to end up in Egypt? Absolutely. He's God. He could have done it any way he desired. He could have corrected Jacob's distasteful preference for the sons of Rachel. He could have not given Joseph these dreams which stirred the pot and angered his brothers, but he didn't. He meant even their evil as part of his good plan. God has a plan. And his plan is good. How radical must those words have sounded coming out of Joseph's mouth? "You meant evil against me." I mean, put yourself in the brothers' shoes in that moment. They're pleading for their lives. They are on their faces before their brother who has the power of life and death over them. And he says straight out, "You meant evil for me." Their intent was to kill him. And they settled for simply selling him and shipping him off to a foreign land, never to be seen again. And then they faked his death. "What you did was evil. You meant it." They hated him. This wasn't just some sibling rivalry. "Dad likes you best." They despised him enough that when they saw him coming from afar, they conspired to murder him. I mean, if you're one of these guys, you're thinking, "We didn't kill him, but we made his life miserable. Now he's going to get us back. No restraints." People with a guilty conscience, especially a well-deserved one, are slow to recognize and understand grace. How could they have comprehended those words from Joseph? "You meant it for evil, but God." God had different plans. And so their evil wasn't excused, but Joseph responds, "Am I in the place of God? Oh, retribution, vengeance? That's not a category I'm allowed to go in. That's a God category. I'm not in his place. Plus, he has seen God move in ways mysterious and wonderful, far beyond his ability to plan or imagine. I mean, think about him looking back at the twists and turns of his own life. He couldn't have planned where he ended up. He couldn't have imagined when he was in the pit, the prominence and the honor that would one day be bestowed upon him. That is something only God could arrange and do, especially from where he came from to where he ended up. It's not through his own conniving or scheming or even just good fortune. This was the hand of God. And he saw how mysterious and yet how wonderful it was. Why would he want to take the driver's seat now? Why would he want to take that role away from God who had been so faithful? Even if he didn't understand it along the way, it was clear God had a plan. God was faithful to enact his plan. So I don't want to take the place of God. Look, guys, we're the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to whom God promised blessing to them and to their offspring in order to create a mighty nation and a powerful testimony. Our story was necessary for that bigger story to continue. That's what he's declaring in these words. So don't be afraid of what I might do to you. Don't be afraid of what anyone else might do to you when God has you as part of his bigger story. Guys, I'm living proof of that. The plans of others matter not. It's the plan of God that will prevail. Through every event of his life, all the twists and turns, the heartaches, he is able to look back and see God behind the curtain, moving every piece into place for the fulfillment not only of his dreams from a couple decades before, but also to set the table for the bigger promises to Abraham's offspring continuing to unfold. And even with the darkest chapters of Joseph's life in full view, Joseph declares that God's plan is undeniably good. The ways he was sinned against and unjustly treated, those were the path for many to be saved, including the ones who had wronged him. From his vantage point now, he must wonder, what's ahead? He's heard some of these promises of God. What's ahead for his children and his children's children? For at the end of this chapter, at the end of this book, they're still in Egypt. They haven't repossessed the land that has been promised to them. Things are going fairly well. But does he recall that promise made to Abraham that his descendants would be afflicted for 400 years in a foreign land? He and his brothers find themselves now in a foreign land. He is about to die. Well, someone remembers those promises. Someone had to pass along that information down to the next generation and the next until it gets to Moses 400 years later. If he did recall that, he most certainly remembered the last part of the promise, that they will come out with great possessions, that God has good planned even in the hardship. Better than anyone at this point, Joseph realizes that troubles along the way, well, they're not indications of either an absence of a divine plan or that his plan is not good. Joseph also understood something else profound about the intentions of God and of man. Not only did God have a plan, a good plan, but God is big enough to carry out his plans completely. You and I, we can mean to do a good many things. And the many things that we can intend to do can be good or bad. Yet, that is no guarantee that we will make any of them happen. Every one of us knows exactly what I mean by that. We can go to YouTube or one of those funniest home video type shows and recognize everybody on there intended one thing, but what the camera captured was something totally different. Or all the supervillains in the big movies, they have their weapons of world destruction and world domination that always end up getting used against them. It's not their intent to have the superhero come and destroy them by the very thing in which they mean to dominate the world. Well, we have a lot of our own scenarios as well. For example, I would intend to remember my wife's birthday and help my children to prepare and plan to honor and bless her. Yet, Thursday evening, at bedtime, I heard one of our girls yelling somewhat hysterically, "Tomorrow's mommy's birthday and we haven't got any presents." Unfortunately, I had a present for her, but it worked out well. They did a great job. We did some good bedtime planning. But my intent to honor and to bless my wife, and the fact that her birthday always comes at the same time every year, still, I was not able to carry out that intent in the planning and preparation part. We all have examples. We all know that what we mean to do is often far short. What actually happens, maybe the other way around. What actually happens is often far short of what we intend to do. We have the best of intentions. And yet, that's not always reality. Our intents don't always equal the end product. God never has one of those moments. He never intends one thing and another thing happens instead. What he means to accomplish gets accomplished fully. He may use means that we weren't expecting or we wouldn't use, but he will bring about his good purposes and plans every time. By this point in the story, Joseph understood that. I don't know that he understood that in the pit. I don't know that he understood that in prison. But by this point, he understood that. And the writer of this book understood that as well. Moses, as he is writing to the then current day descendants of Israel that were at that point in bondage, he wants them to know that they too are children of promise. They too are part of the bigger story that God is writing. They too have a part to play. The promises God made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he intends to advance according to his good plan in their lives as well. And the same could be said for you and me. We can rest assured his plans will advance. Just because Joseph never saw the completion of the bigger story for Israel doesn't mean he stopped believing God would fulfill it. There's no indication that after his father's burial that Joseph ever would have set foot in Canaan again. But because he believed it was the land of promise, because he believed the promises of God, he gave instructions that his bones were to be carried there when Israel left, so that he could be buried in that land. Joseph lived about 17 years there and then the other 90 plus in Egypt. And he was quite prosperous and influential there, but his home was where the plan of God would be taking his people. He knew the certainty of fulfillment wasn't hanging on his ability to see it with his own eyes, but on the faithfulness of the one who had made those promises. So where does all of this leave us? You may find yourself in confusing, challenging circumstances. If you don't today, you will someday. That doesn't mean that your hard days aren't part of God's big plan. You know that promise that Abraham, that was made to Abraham, that all nations would be blessed through him? Well, that would eventually find its fulfillment when Christ came, when he was crucified and made a way for people of every nation, tribe, and tongue to find their hope and help in him. Straight from the line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, through Judah, the promise advanced until Christ was born, lived his sinless life, and was crucified for you and for me. The reality of and the outworking of the blessing promised to Abraham is what we experience today. From that initial promise, he also added other promises that we can hold on to as well. Promises like, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Promises, they're not just sayings. They're plans that he has. They are as certain as the one who promised them. Statements like, all things work together for those that love him. And that Christ gave himself up for the church, Ephesians says, that he might sanctify her, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy, and without blemish, a continuation, an expansion of that promise to Abraham. And I go to prepare a place for you. These are all not just sayings that are nice things to hope on. These are realities that will occur because the one who promised them is faithful and true. And there is no lack in him to be able to bring them about. If we have trouble grasping that even things meant for evil, God can make good, mean for good, there's one place we should lock our gaze this morning. And that's at Calvary. The religious leaders meant to eliminate a threat. Pilate was just looking to appease a crowd and keep his own hands clean. But God meant to save the world through his son's unjust crucifixion. What they meant for evil against him, God meant for the greatest good possible. That's where we must look if we ever wonder or doubt the goodness of God's plan in our own lives. As Paul writes in Romans 8, 31 and 32, if God is for us, who can be against us? How does he define God being for us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? That's his plan. Jesus' sacrifice speaks loud and clear for all time and in every situation what the disposition of God is towards you and me. He is for us. And he intends to do us good no matter what our circumstances or our emotions tell us to the contrary. And God is big enough to carry out all his plans completely. My financial circumstances didn't change when I was confronted by these realities. But my perspective did. Is it still a temptation? Yes, it is. But I know where I can turn to when it is. And I can have confidence that his plans will trump my limited view or understanding of what's fair. We're a part of his big plan. In addition to the myriad of other smaller ones that he has, that we won't see or recognize or understand till that day that we see him face to face. And all his plans are good because he is good. And he's big enough to carry out all of his plans completely. One day we'll marvel at the intricacies and the means in which he used to carry out his good plans in our lives and far beyond. So today, let's do all we can to encourage each other along the way, because his good plans trump everything. Let's pray together.